And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we interview legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. And remember, we shine only when we make you shine. The message has always been to stand for peace, love, and happiness for legendary singer-songwriter Felix Cavalieri. Making people feel good is primary to his illustrious 50-year career that includes Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Songwriter Hall of Fame, Vocal Group Hall of Fame, and Grammy Hall of Fame. Few artists can claim they defined a generation. Felix Cavalieri continues to remind us to keep listening for the world's beauty. The classically trained pianist born in Pelham, New York, idolized Ray Charles, Marvin Gaye, and Sam Cooke. Felix Cavalieri embraced the Hammond organ and pioneered a fresh rock and roll sound. Upon leaving Syracuse University to form the Escorts and become a backup musician for Joe D and the Starlighters, and later Sandy Scott, who knew that his legendary next stop would be the beginning of an illustrious Hall of Fame career. Early in 1965, Felix formed the Young Rascals with Dino Danelli, Andy Brigati, and Gene Cornish. That October, they caught the attention of promoter-manager Sir Sid Bernstein with their high-energy set at Long Island's elite club, Barge. Signed to Atlantic Records and now called The Rascals, the mega hit Good Lovin' struck number one in February of 1966. They followed suit with a string of hits like I've Been Lonely Too Long, Groovin', which became a number one hit in 67, How Can I Be Sure, A Girl Like You, A Beautiful Morning, and People Gotta Be Free, also number one in 68. The Rascals are considered the best blue-eyed soul group to come out of the 60s, as well as one of the groups with the most record sales. By the early 70s, the Rascals experimented with more jazz-influenced sound and moved to Columbia Records. The Rascals disbanded in 72. Felix Cavalieri's solo career thrived during this decade. He released his self-titled debut album with Todd Rundgren at the producer helm. His follow-up albums were Destiny in 74, Castles in the Air in 79. Castles in the Air produced another top 40 hit, only Heart Sees, which reached number two. Dreams in Motion in 94, and in 2008 he collaborated with Stax guitar legend Steve Cropper on the Grammy-nominated Nudge It Up a Notch, and again in 2010 with Midnight Flyer. Felix Cavalieri calls Nashville home base, where he's constantly collaborating and writing new material. He's also finishing his memoir and has an active tour schedule with Felix Cavalieri's Rascals. Visit FelixCavalieriMusic.com for further information and tour information. The Rascals have generated 18 top 40 hits, 5 top 10 hits, 3 number 1 mega hits. Their hits include Groovin', Good Lovin', Beautiful Morning, How Can I Be Sure, and People Gotta Be Free. Felix Cavalieri is the king of blue-eyed soul. His songs help define a generation. He is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Grammy Hall of Fame, Songwriters Hall of Fame, Vocal Group Hall of Fame. Some people may not realize it, but the Rascals were the first rock band in the world, says Stephen Van Zandt. Please welcome singer, songwriter, musician, record producer, and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Felix Cavalieri to the Ray Shasho Show. Hey, Felix.
How are you?
I'm doing good, man.
Well, can you believe it's been 50 years of music? That was very nice.
Thank you, thank you. You deserve all the praise in the world, man. You know, I was a top 40 DJ back in the late 70s. I really appreciate top 40 music. And, you know, my hat goes off to you, man. You and the band were incredible. Hit after hit.
Well, thank you. We had a great time, too, man. That's really important to note, you know.
Well, that's the main thing. If you're having a good time, you know, everything works out. You know, if you're under pressure all the time. Were you guys under pressure at all back then?
Time to time. You know, like following Good Lovin' was a very pressure-filled situation because after that we really wanted to write our own songs. And, you know, everybody else was doing it. Beatles were doing it. Stones were doing it. Spoonful were doing it. But that's when the pressure really started, is, you know, trying to come up with, you know, winning songs.
Yeah, I know there was a lot of pressure back in the '60s. You know, to generate hits. I talked to Tommy James, and of course, you know his story with the mafia and all that stuff. So
I do. He's a good friend.
He's a good guy. I've interviewed Tommy many times, and the story's incredible. You know, it really is. And
yes,
I guess there was a lot of record companies like that back then, right?
Well, you know, I mean, like I said, the business came from a whole different beginning, you know, than it is obviously today. You know, it was it was like a garage type of industry until Woodstock came along, and then the corporations took real note, you know, and they started coming and buy properties and buy these little small companies that were like, you know, out of Chicago and, you know, like BJ and Chet. They were little mom-pop things then in those days, you know?
Right. Yeah, I guess that's how Elvis started with, I'm losing it now. Yeah.
Son.
He Son Records, right. Little Mom and Pop, and then the big boys came in and took them away.
RCA.
Yep.
RCA.
Yep. Good story there. I can't believe you're celebrating 50 years. There's a lot of milestones going on now in the rock world. 50 years.
Well, that makes two of us. That's a long time. And, you know, the whole thing is that, you know, it really doesn't feel like that, thank God, because of the fact that, you know, our music's still alive, which, you know, that to me is really, like, amazing, you know. Who would have ever believed that, you know?
But your music is featured everywhere, which is awesome, you know, movies, television, commercials, you know, it lives on forever, which is awesome.
Well, you know, basically what happened is in the, I think it was in the 70s, that movie came out that slips my mind right now that reinvented, or was it 80s? It reinvented all of the older songs. It became like a real marketing tool, you know?
Right.
And other than that, you know, it must have been 80 because the disco world kind of shut everything off for a while, you know?
Yeah, it did. You had a hit, though, I guess it was in the 80s, right? And
it was Only
was...
a Lonely Heart Sees. Yeah, I was on
right.
Epic Records, and they asked me to do an adult contemporary album because they thought adult contemporary was going to be a big, you know, a big thing, which it was, and it became, and that did very well.
Did you ever think about going the disco route? You know, I mean, you know, the Bee Gees were very successful at it. You being from New York, it would have been probably very easy for you.
Well, I don't dance too well, so it would have been a little difficult for me, you know. But
yeah. Either you kind of sell out a little bit, or you don't. I talked to Dennis LeCourrier from Dr. Hook, you know, and.
Sure.
You know, after
sure,
Cover the Rolling Stone, they were broke. So they had to do something, and that's why they got into the disco-type thing to make some money. And, you know, he's another good guy. Yeah.
Well, you know, like the Survivors, man, you know, like we've been around a long time. And it's, I think, you know, seriously, it's like any other industry. If a product comes out, you merge up with the times, you're going to fall behind. There's just a certain, you know, amount of the audience that dislikes when you change too much.
Right. But unfortunately, radio thinks the same way now, mainstream radio, and they won't change at all. They play the same old crap over and over again, which is ridiculous.
Well,
you know
that's the way it is. You know, like I say, that's the corporate rock idea that has come up over the years. But that's where we have so much now. I mean, seriously, the good and the bad about Spotify and those things. You know, the good is that, you know, our entire record collection is available right on our phone. That's
true.
Amazing to me, and it always will be.
I still miss the old days, man, going down to the record store and buying records, you know.
But, you know, like I say, you know, like it's pretty amazing to just turn on your phone and listen to anything just about that was ever recorded. You know, if you think about that, that's an amazing thing.
Well, YouTube is my favorite. I mean, you just punch in and you got a video, you know?
Absolutely.
Are you making any money on YouTube when people play your music, or that doesn't happen?
Well, you know, the word money has either a capital M or a small M, you know? And for the most part, it's a small M with most of these streaming services, you know? But again, you got to realize that's 50 years of music that's, you know, after us, and, you know, like, you got to get in line for that. But, yeah, you make something, but, you know, not to bore you, but the legislation is being worked on daily, constantly, by our ASCAP and BMIs, and you know, we got to get the congressmen to change the rules a little bit.
Yeah, they have to, because, you know, a lot of musicians are really getting ripped off. I feel sorry for a lot of them, you know.
You know, it's a different world now, and you know, like, the intellectual property discussion is international now, you know. So we have a problem, and it can be fixed if people would pay attention to it, but most people don't even know what it means.
Yeah. Where were your parents from?
We grew up, they grew up in New York City and in the Bronx.
Right.
Their family came from overseas, from Italy. And then I
from
grew
Italy,
up
right?
in a very nice place. Yes, that my parents wanted to bring their children up because of the education that was there, called Pelham, Pelham, New York. And the good part of that is that I was able to hear the very beginning of Alan Freed's rock and roll in New York City.
Yep. Did they come through Ellis Island? Did they immigrate from Italy?
Probably,
or?
Their parents did, but not them. No,
their parents were
second generation. Yeah.
Yeah, my grandparents came in through Ellis Island, and they settled in Brooklyn, New York.
Yep.
So.
Interesting stories, that's for sure.
Exactly. Man, I see you on TV all the time now, from the Time Life Presents the 60s. That's one way.
Yeah, you know, that came up really, really out of the blue, you know, and we did it. I did it, and it was really fun, and, you know, there's a purpose behind it. I mean, that album's a pretty good album, if anybody likes
it. It is a good album.
Some of the old goodies. It's a really good album.
It's a very good album. Everybody should get that, you know. You got all the great stuff from the 60s all on one CD, which is awesome.
Correct.
Many artists say that you are their influence, and so who were some of your influences back in very early days?
Well, as I say, you know, being from the East Coast there, where Alan Freed brought what we now know as rock and roll, I was able to hear some phenomenal piano players such as Fats Domino, Jerry Lee Lewis, and, of course, Ray Charles. I was able to hear some fantastic singers such as the Flamingos, the Moonglows, the Penguins. I was able to hear just magic lyrics from Chuck Berry, and I heard all of these people, and as a, you know, young guy who was a classical pianist, supposedly, it just really, like, just took me over.
So you must have liked doo-wop as well, right, coming from New York?
I liked it all. I mean, like I say, that was when it was on the radio, and, you know, I was very fortunate to live in that area to hear all of this. And, you know, I mean, I just can't emphasize the magnificent voices that were around then. Magnificent.
You know, I had Mark Stein on the show recently, you know, from Vanilla Fudge, which is one of the bands that, you know, looked up to you guys. And, of course, the Vagrants, Leslie West band.
Yes.
You know, that's mentioned a lot. Another sound came from Detroit with the Blue Eyed Soul, Mitch Ryder, from the Detroit influence as well.
Yes.
So was there any rival there between the New York and Detroit
you know,
soul,
I
rock
never
soul
really
influence?
Felt that. You know, we never really felt that. The the stage was so full of Englishmen that, you know, we kind of welcomed the Americans, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, one band that I always hear the Rascals in is Peter Wolf and Jay Giles. Big time. And, of course, Bruce Springsteen. You know, there's a lot of influence there with Bruce Springsteen.
Well, you know, that's really what it really boils down to, is people admiring other people and kind of like doing their songs live. And then from that, their style emerges, you know, and then they become what they are, you know, which is really what we did is the same thing. We played other people's songs until, you know, we had our own and our own identity.
When you formed the New Rascals, you had a local guy from Tampa there, from the tropics. It was Charlie Souza, right?
That wasn't me. That was the other guys. That was Dino and Gene. They did New Rascals. I've always been a
They did the New Rascals. Okay.
Yeah, they did that. I mean, unfortunately, that's one of the stories about groups. You know, when they split up, you know, they have to figure out how they're going to identify themselves, which is kind of, I don't know, it's kind of silly, but that's what it is, you know.
Yeah, it happens all the time now. When you have one guy in the band left from the original, and he's the drummer, and he doesn't sing, or he's not the singer and songwriter. I mean, that sometimes gets. I mentioned Rare Earth, which was one of my favorite bands, and I know Peter Rivera, and it hurts me when Rivera goes on the road without Peter Rivera. I mean, to me, he was Rare Earth. It's almost like Mark Farner as well, you know.
I tell you, that's the strangest thing, because like in the old days, there were groups that that the actual record company owned their names, like the Coasters and the Drifters and the Temptations, so they could mix and match whoever they wanted in that. So basically, it's the public. You know, I mean, if they're satisfied, fine, and if they're not satisfied, you know, and then you've got this this type of tribute bands that are out there now, which is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life, because when you know these guys and you know who they were, and then all of a sudden you look up and you see these clones, it's like, okay, what's that about? You know, it's the holograms I'm worried about. The holograms are going to haunt
us. That's next, right?
Yeah.
That's next, the holograms.
Yes.
Welcome the Rascals.
Then you got the hologram. What year is this? Oh, I see. It's the 100-year mark. Gotcha.
Yeah, the 100-year mark.
Yeah.
I loved your thinking about that. I loved your Broadway show, man. That was awesome.
Well, thank you. That was good. We had a good time. You know, it was fun, and it ended a little prematurely. But I say, it was quite an endeavor that they took upon themselves to do, and. I don't know that it'll happen again, you know, because it was really huge.
Now, why did it end early?
Well, I mean, seriously, it ran its course because, it was a very expensive show to produce.
Yeah.
And I think that was the real problem with it, is that it was fine when we did it on Broadway, but when we took it to the rest of the country, It was overwhelming in terms of, like, the cost of the production. You know, we had 22 people on the road, you know.
Wow.
And the contrast between that and 50 years ago, we had two people on the road, you know. I mean, we had the guy on the left of the stage and the guy on the right of the stage. That was it. So from that to 22 with buses and trucks, it was a little bit too difficult to reproduce.
Yeah, way too expensive. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, this is a business, whether we like it or not, you know. And, when you get ticket prices up to a certain point, you know, the people are going to rebel. They're going to say, wait a second, you know, this is my monthly budget for, you know, entertainment for the year. That's not a good idea.
But, you know, it's the original Rascals, you know, why not? I'll pay it.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Well, it was the original Rascals plus an immense stage production. You know, I mean, really immense. I mean, we had a 50-foot screen. And, you know, as I say, I wasn't promoting it. I wasn't the promoter. But, you know, it was expensive. Let's just leave it at that, you know, because it was.
Yeah. But what was it like working for the legendary Steve Bernstein? You know, people know Bernstein was worked with the Beatles, the Stones, Herman's Hermits, Moody Blues, the Kinks. I mean, that had to have been, you know, just the
you
right
mean,
person.
Sid Bernstein. Well, I tell you, Sid was a lovely, lovely man, and he was a person who could see people's tastes coming, you know, in the future.
Right.
You know, the Beatles, of course, he saw. He also saw Bobby Fischer's chess, you know, tournament there being a big, big event. He also saw, like, believe it or not, a karate in New York City, a taekwondo. He brought that to Madison Square. He could see things that were going to become interesting to the public. So it was, was really fun working with him because not many people have that type of foresight, you know.
Now, he became your manager, right, the band's manager as well? Or
absolutely. He became our manager and a friend and you know, it was really interesting because through his contacts from years in the business, he was able to procure a record deal for us very soon. We had a record deal within 6 months of our inception as a group. We started in, I think, February. We had a record deal by September. So that was really, really amazing.
That's unheard of. That's unbelievable. Yeah, I talked to Tommy Rowe. And, you know, he tried to get the Beatles signed originally, and they refused him. They kind of laughed at the album when he played it for them. And so it goes to show you.
Well, there's a lot of stories like that in our industry of people who have rejected monster talent, you know.
Yep.
Just goes to show you, you know, like no one really knows, you know, but the public. The public really makes the determination. If they like
definitely.
Something, that's it. That's it.
Definitely. They need to let the public decide more than, you know, corporate America and attorneys and
well, that's
all that
it.
Stuff.
That's the way it is. Now, of course, you can always, you know, like publicize the living daylights out of it, and perhaps you can, you know, you can really twist people's brains like that. But there's nothing like a hit that jumps right off the track, you know?
Right. You mentioned in a past interview that being named to the Songwriters Hall of Fame was a very special treat to you.
Well, yeah. First of all, it's there's not that many Hall of Fame songwriters. It's a different entity in that there's no television attached to it. It's a private event. There's also no building that's the Songwriters Hall of Fame. So when that actually happened, that was really quite a treat. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I always come to mind, you know, when I think of songwriters, for some reason I always think of Carole King, you know, and that whole era of, you know, all those great songs that was produced in that building back in the day.
Well, it also goes back way, way before that with Cole Porter and George Gershwin.
Cole Porter,
You know, like these monster Johnny Mercer, David, Burt Bacharach. I mean, there's a really elite group there. And, you know, not to belittle the whole Rock and Roll Hall of Fame of all of that, but, I mean, it meant a lot to me, that's for sure. They treated us royally. They still treat us royally at that Songwriters Hall of Fame.
I was watching, you know, Ed Sullivan is back, you know, on reruns. I was watching, you guys have been on Ed Sullivan many times. I was watching Harry James the other day doing a Herb Alpert song. What talent back then those big band sounds had, man. It was incredible, you know.
I didn't think about it. Incredible is the right word. You know, I mean, the people who put their $10 or $5 into a ticket in those days, they really, really got their money's worth. And, you know, the interesting thing is, with all due respect to the visual part of our industry and all the dancers, they were listening to music the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
That was all music and great music.
Great.
So, you know, I mean, times change. I mean, the mediums have changed. The media has changed. And, you know, it's like a different world out there. Now you go up there, and if you can't dance, you know, if you don't have dancers, you know, and you don't have lights and all that kind of stuff, then you must not be very good, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's all visual now, you know. I saw Frank Sinatra, believe it or not, 5 times in concert, and the most incredible band I've ever seen in my life. Did you meet Frank?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I figured from New Jersey.
I met his son. I met his son, and I met his daughters, but, you know, I missed Frank. I mean, you talk about a guy 50 years. I mean, his music is still... Every Italian restaurant I go into is playing Frank Sinatra. I love it.
Yeah, me too. I was a big fan of Sinatra. And I was fortunate to interview Trini Lopez, who was on the Reprise label, and Frank helped him along.
Yep.
And he had some great stories as well.
I met Trini many years ago. You know, that's one of the nice things about being around as long as I've been around. I've met a lot of really great people and their talent. And you know, it's something that I always remember is meeting some of these legends.
Well, you're working on a memoir. When is that going to be completed?
Well, we're done now. We're out now into the publishing world and getting ready to go out to print. You know, it's been about 2 years in the making. So hopefully we get it out there soon.
Well, there's some great stories in that book, man.
Well, that's one of the things that people really like. They like the stories, you know, about the, you know, some of the guys you meet and some of the people you meet and some of the incidents that happen. You know, I tried to stay away from some of the breakup stories because I don't really think anybody cares about that.
Yeah, the drama. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people that want to hear the drama, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So we've got a little drama in there, too, then, just for them.
You and Gene were recently on Cousin Brucey's program, right, on Sirius XM?
Right.
And you shared some big news. What was the big news?
Well, basically, we're trying to put another Rascal Tour together.
Awesome.
You know, he really wants to do it. I really want to do it. The other guys are kind of tied up. Eddie's doing a solo show. He's really not interested in Dino seems to be a painter these days. He's not that interested.
Really? Huh.
So we decided to go and kind of put together a little bit of a super group with Carmine Appice from Vanilla Fudge Cactus. And we're still working on getting some other kind of people. We want to make it an exciting thing. And it's the Rascals music. And basically that's what that's all about. And we're you know, getting ready to go out again. It all came about because of fans out in the primarily in Hawaii, that when I did a show out there, they just really begged us. They begged me. I said, can you do it again? Can you put together the guys? And I said, well, you know, if you look at the clock on the wall, we better do it fast.
That's true. Unfortunately, it is true.
Yeah, you got to get out there and do it while you can still do it, you know, because it's one thing to just go up there and, you know, not be whole, you know. You want to be able to, you know, produce your sound very close to what it sounded like when you were 11 years old, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's not easy to travel the way you guys do either, especially I can imagine the way, you know, as you get older, it can't be as easy, you know?
Well, I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, it's not so much the age, it's the TSA and, you know,
restrictions
and, you know, all that stuff. That's why a lot of the musicians say these days, they don't get paid to play, they get paid to travel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Well, I love Carmine. I've had him on the show and I met him.
Oh, great.
And that's going to be a great show. Carmine is so talented, man. He did a lot with Rod Stewart. You know, did a lot of songwriting with Rod Stewart. But you guys have coming up April 5th. You're going to be at Cor d'Alene or something like that?
Cor d'Alene, out in Idaho, yes.
Out in Idaho, right. And then you'll be June 9th.
Yes.
These are some, you know, confirmed dates, I guess. You'll be in Indiana at the Memorial Opera House.
Correct. Yeah, I think the tour starts with Rascals in probably July for the most part. I think there's a couple of other shows in there, but they can get that on my website. Website is going to be called therascalstour.com.
Okay, great. And, of course, you got the Malt Shop Memories Cruise that is that something you do all
Yes,
every
I
year?
Do.
There's a lot of people on that for that show.
We just, And, you know, basically the people that are on that show, they don't do like a whole hour. You know, they do probably five songs. That's what I'm thinking, you know, because you'll be on the boat forever, you know.
Yeah, it's Woodstock on the high seas.
Yeah, I just came off of a Flower Power cruise, and, you know, that was fun. They do that in two shifts of 3 days. And Peter Noon was on it. Mark Lindsay was on that. See who else was that? Bicky Dolenz was on that. Family Stone was on that. Grassroots, you know. And then we get off, and then the next batch comes on, and the people just love it.
I've yet to be on that one of those cruises yet, and I need a book. Those things get sold out so quickly, you know.
A year ago,
you got to make reservations. Yeah. Exactly.
It's an interesting thing, and you know, like if you've got a couple of days that you can spend, you know, like just doing, you know, nothing but listening and, you know, like watching people go backwards to when they were kids and, you know, relive those days, it's a lot of fun.
You know, music makes life easy, you know, to live. Without, you know, without music, I would have never made it throughout these years, man. I mean, honestly. That's what makes peace.
I think
peace.
Really that's a universal thing, whether people realize it or not. If you take that out of our lives, you're going to be really missing like a real positive energy of healing. And as I say, you know, I heard in the introduction the peace, love, and happiness, which is what our generation stood for. Mm-hmm. We tried to stand for anyway.
I talked to Dave Mason, and he had vets come up to him and thank him because they used to listen to music in the foxholes during the Vietnam era, you know. So
many stories like that. That's something I really hold proud because of the fact that most of us we're really not qualified to go over there and do that. So we did our share by, you know, entertaining the troops and playing and kind of making them feel a little bit more at home.
Right. Right. Yeah, they're very appreciative, too, I'm sure.
Absolutely. So are we of them, by the way. I say that every night in my shows. Any Vietnam vets out here, thank you.
Yep. You know, my dad, I take care of my dad. Actually, we live in the same house together. He's 93, World War II vet from the Marines.
Wow.
He went to Okinawa, Saipan. You know, he was, you don't get too many World War II vets anymore.
Wow.
Not too many of them
around.
Good
for you, man. That's a treat, you know. That's really a treat.
Yes, it is. I want to say belated congratulations to you first on the induction on the Hammond Hall of Fame, which is awesome.
Yes.
They got a great list of people there. I know Keith Emerson's in there. I was fortunate to interview Keith before he passed away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, congratulations on being honored at the 40th annual Why Hunger Chapin Award Gala, which is
Harry
cool.
Chapin
and I guess,
Award. Yeah, that was nice as well. And
yeah,
you know, like I say, it's really nice to have people like you know, like give you these wonderful gifts. You know, but seriously, when you start talking about some of these vets that were kept alive and kept happy because of the music, that's worth everything. Let me tell you.
Right. And I saw the YouTube video you and Billy Joel performing together, which was incredible.
Sure, yeah.
The audience went nuts, man.
Yeah, that's he's going on his 57th show, sold out at Madison Square Garden soon, which is incredible.
Wow, really?
57, yeah.
That is incredible. I saw there's a you guys were on so many television shows back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
But there's one in particular that I was shocked about. It was the Tonight Show, but Joe Garagiola was the replacing Carson. I think it was November 69. And you guys were on it, but I think Janis Joplin, Phil Spector, and Santana were on the show. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Oh, my goodness. What a show that had
been.
Yeah, I
remember that. Yeah, Santana was just coming up at that point, you know, and it was an interesting night. You know, Janis was her usual self, you know, and it was interesting. I mean, rock and roll on TV in those late nights has always been kind of, kind of interesting for me because nowadays it's a lot more taped. But in those days, a lot of the stuff was live, you know, and you really had a difficult time sounding good, you know.
Exactly.
A little difficult. Yep. I know that Jimi Hendrix actually walked off because he scared him to death with the volume of his amps. So he just went home, you know.
Jesse, you know, the Youngbloods walked off the Carson show because they wanted to play something different instead of just their hit. I talked to Jesse. I know Jesse, Colin Young, real good. And,
really?
That was I think they're the only one that really walked off.
Yeah, I understand both sides of that story, you know, but you know, they're there for one reason. They're there for ratings, you know, and they're there for public. You know, they're not there for any kind of advancement of music. You know, that's the way it is.
Yeah. That's the way it is, yeah, exactly. You know, Tommy James was telling me, I don't know if this is true or not, he's a character, but he was saying that he thought Ed Sullivan was drunk half the time.
Really?
That's what he told me, yeah. I guess
he was a kind of a very staid individual. He really had a little bit of difficulty identifying with the younger generation, you know, because you know, he really paid more attention to the older, you know, comedians and you know, people from, you know, his youth. You know, he had to put us on, so to speak. You know, he really didn't enjoy the music. You know,
yeah, he mispronounced so many people on that show.
Yeah, he was a tough guy, you know what I'm saying, to work for, because he wasn't he didn't seem to be a very joyful man, you know.
Yeah, yeah, they called him Stoneface. I think that was his nickname or something. Old Stoneface.
Yeah,
face.
But he helped us out a lot. I mean, especially the
beginning
of our career, we got a lot of exposure there, and everybody saw it. You know, I hate to talk about people when they're not around here, but you know,
he was
a different kind of guy.
Oh, I mean. Thank God for him. All the music he brought, you know, to America and the Beatles.
Absolutely.
And everybody, Elvis.
Beatles, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Stones, I remember they were on there, Controversy. And, you know, it was part of our youth, there's no question.
Sure. And it's pretty cool that it's a syndication now. It's on, I mean, it's on again on repeats, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've been watching it a lot. You guys were actually invited to Woodstock.
I got to get back to work here, man. I'm in a studio right now. We're pounding.
Oh, you're in the studio. Okay, cool.
Yeah, we're in the studio, and I'm hoping we have enough on there to
I think we do. I think we do.
Give me a call again sometime, and we can do as much as you like, you know.
Sure. Keep in touch, man. I want to know all about the memoir and all your projects and the tour with, you know, the tour you're going to have, I guess, coming up in July, right, with Carmine? Is the one with Carmine?
Pretty much, yeah. I will do that. Yeah. I'll have Melissa make sure that she contacts you, because, you know, obviously you interview a lot of people, and, you know, we can continue this. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but like I say, they're giving me these ugly signs in the room there. I'm due for work.
Felix, thank you, man, for being on the show and all the great music and looking forward to more shows and, of course, your memoir. Thank you so much, Felix.
And I hope I run into you one of these days at one of those shows. Please do.
That'll be great. I look forward to that.
All right, Ray. Thank you, man. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Felix. Take care, man.
See you.
For more information about Felix Cavalieri and the Rascals, visit www.felixcavalierimusic.com. He's on Facebook, www.facebook.com/Felix Cavalieri Rascals, Cavalieri's Rascals, and also on Twitter, twitter.com/Felix Cavalieri. A very special thanks to Melissa of Moxie Publicity for arranging this interview with Felix, and, of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of the Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or you'd like to be on the show, contact me at theRayShashoShow@gmail.com. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition, Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to Be Politically Incorrect, in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio, Station 1.